And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, the 9th of June, 2016. Want to invite you to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, all that information you need to take action. Let's start with announcements. The Earth First Northwest Rendezvous starts tomorrow. And that's going to be taking place in the Pacific Northwest, and specifically on the North Fork of the Middle Fork of the Willamette River, somewhere near Westphal and Oak Ridge, Oregon. You probably at this point need to go to forestdefensenow.com. That's forestdefensenow.com for the information you need, including specific directions on how to get there. It's a Round River, it's a Northwest Rendezvous, and it's June 10th through the 13th, so check that out and get up there. Too bad I'm not going to make that one. The Earth First Round River Rendezvous is taking place in the Great Lakes Basin this summer, and the dates on that are June 29th through July 7th in the Manistee National Forest. If you want more information on how to get to the Earth First Round River Rendezvous, go to the Earth First Newswire and check in some of the back posts, or you could send email to rrr2016@riseup.net. That's rrr2016@riseup.net. The Hardesty Mountain roadless area has been protected from clear cutting in this story from Cascadia Wildlands. For a few years, Cascadia Wildlands supporters and conservation allies have been attempting to save the threatened Hardesty Mountain roadless area southeast of Eugene from clear-cutting proposed by the Eugene Bureau of Land Management. The John's Last Stand timber sale would have taken a bite out of the roadless area and next to the popular Mount June hiking trail. Following an administrative protest, appeal, and communications with the Bureau of Land Management, cooler heads prevailed, and we were able to reach an agreement in early June with the agency to cancel the timber sale. We're celebrating here and hope to see folks on the Mount June or Hardesty Mountain Trail this summer. For more information, go to www.cascwild.org. That's cascwild.org. In Canada, a fur auction house has been firebombed in this story from Biteback, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Last week, I gained access to the rooftop of the North American Fur Auction and sabotaged air conditioning units. I also lit several petrol bombs to send a clear message to those who make their living killing and torturing animals that the times are a-changin'. This action was done in solidarity with all the lovely persons giving freedom to animals trapped in fur farm hell. And signed Toronto ALF. And here's a note. North American Fur Auctions is the largest fur auction house in North America. North American Fur Auctions corporate offices and auction facility are located in Toronto, Canada at 65 Skyway Avenue. And this, for further information, go to theearthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And a judge has denied the Crow Butte uranium mine renewal license in this story from Native Sun News, as found on the Earth First Newswire. The Oglala Sioux tribe and activists scored a win on May 26th when federal administrative judges ruled that Nuclear Regulatory Commission staff had failed to take a hard look at cultural resources in recommending renewal of our uranium mining license for Crow Butte Mine located near the reservation. The decision delays permitting. The tribe, intervening in the license renewal application for the mine in Dawes County, Nebraska, adjacent to the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, argued that the staff recommended approval in violation of its rights under the National Historic Preservation Act and the National Environmental Protection Act. Resolving in favor of the tribe's argument, an oversight panel established that the Atomic Licensing and Safety Board ruled the NRC's staff has not met its identification obligation under the two laws, nor has the NRC staff in its environmental assessment undertaken a hard look under NEPA at cultural resources within the license area. The board requested the staff remedy its noncompliance, in other words, go back to the drawing board and address tribal concerns over historical and cultural sites of relevance before any permitting. An attorney for the interveners, David Frankel, thanked people who have supported the legal costs of the intervention. Nancy Kyle, an Oglala activist in the Sisterhood to Protect Sacred Water, which is based in the mining-impacted town of Crawford, Nebraska, said the ruling is a case of the oversight panel making government personnel follow the rules they should have initially. Woohoo, she said. A federal agency determined a foreign company could not properly consult with First Nations. Crow Butte Mine is a decades-old project of the world's largest publicly traded uranium mining company, the Canadian Cameco Corporation, which is facing federal tax-dodging allegations in its home country and an investigation by the Internal Revenue Service over $32 million in United States-backed taxes. The company is reducing uranium well field development at its Wyoming operations as its stock values are crashing. And you can find more information at theearthfirstjournal.org, Newswire. And from Mexico, we read that foxes and birds have been liberated in this story received anonymously by the Earth First Newswire. At 4 a.m., while so-called Mexico City was blanketed by police pollution and restless capitalism, 320 birds and three foxes were liberated from Mercado Sonora, a crowded distribution point of non-human creatures kidnapped from their homes and crammed into horrid conditions of human negligence. All the human-labeled bird species that spread their wings, such as Amazilia, Berylina, Aquila, Chrysaetos, and Ferromacris mocino, are found within the bioregions of Mexico, and so we are hoping they have a great chance of returning to their perch, or at least finding a viable new one where they can rest and continue to exercise their colorful existence. The foxes were tended to by a comrade and transported to their bioregions where, once released, began to frolic once again in rejuvenation. While we cannot help them all at once, nor control the fate of all those liberated, we can break their chains, alleviate their suffering, and offer a space to breathe and escape into remaining habitat. Unfortunately, there remain many cages, many lives stacked and suffocated. For this reason, we send out this note, this shout into the fibers of civilization. To all fellow beings, whether or not you identify as an activist, radical, anarchist, punk, etc., we all have a choice, the ability to defend life, human and not human. Every day we choose how we impact our surroundings. Every day there is a creature trembling in the corner of a cage. Every day a sprout is pushing against concrete. Let us not forget our potential to act upon our values, whether it is spreading stories and inspiration, nourishing seeds, or slipping on a mask and quietly opening doors, etc. We all have a role in the fight for liberation. An instinctual insurrection, signed LATTAL, which stands for Liberación Animal Transfronteriza, or Transborder Animal Liberation, and you can find more information at theearthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And United States agents are making a move against illegal timber imports from the Amazon in this story by Micah Rosenberg, with editing by Noeline Walder, Amy Stevens, and David Gregorio, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. U.S. agents searched the offices of a California-based wood importer this week as part of a broadening government crackdown on imports of illegally harvested timber, according to a previously unreported federal search warrant seen by Reuters. The Department of Homeland Security agents are probing whether privately held Global Plywood and Lumber Incorporated violated U.S. and Peruvian laws by importing wood that officials say was taken from the Amazon without proper permits, according to a warrant filed in the United States District Court for the Southern District of California in San Diego. No charges have been brought against the company. A Homeland Security spokesman in Houston said the investigation was ongoing. In February, wood flooring giant Lumber Liquidators Incorporated agreed to pay more than $13 million in criminal fines and forfeitures to resolve a U.S. Department of Justice investigation into the import of wood illegally logged in far eastern Russia, home to many endangered species. The Justice Department called that the largest financial penalty for timber trafficking under the Lacey Act, a conservation law passed in 1990 and amended in 2008 to ban commerce on certain plants and plant products, including those made from illegally logged woods. Global Plywood began importing wood products from Peru in 2007 and started receiving shipments from Peruvian export firm Inversiones La Arosa in 2010, according to an affidavit filed with the search warrant. A 2010 investigation by the Peruvian Forest Service found that La Arosa had been cutting down cedar illegally and revoked the company's logging concession, according to the affidavit, which said there was probable cause to believe both companies violated the Lacey Act. Between 2012 and 2015, Global Plywood imported more than 9,700 cubic meters of wood from La Arosa, worth more than $3.6 million, the affidavit said. Peru's Amazonian tropical forest is second in size to Brazil's. The country loses approximately 1,100 square miles of forest per year, and an estimated 80% of the logging in Peru is illegal, according to the World Bank. A 2006 report by the bank said the illegal trade in the country generated between $44.5 million and $72 million annually. The profit motive is large. A single Peruvian mahogany tree can be sold for more than $11,000 on the U.S. lumber market, according to a study by the Environmental Investigation Agency, or EIA, a London-based nonprofit. Partly as a result of the 2009 U.S.-Peru Free Trade Agreement, Peru enacted tougher laws and created specialized agencies to fight illegal harvesting, according to the EIA's Julia Arunaga. Companies must submit an application to the Peruvian government that identifies the location, volume, and type of wood harvested each year. A 2012 EIA study said exporters can sidestep Peruvian regulations by routinely falsifying documents and permits. The study found more than 100 timber shipments to the United States between January 2008 and May 2010 contained illegally logged trees, 35% of all shipments leaving Peru during that time. An investigation of Global Plywood began when Peruvian Customs and Forest Service officials in September contacted U.S. authorities about a massive shipment of wood aboard a vessel en route to the port of Houston, the affidavit said. Peruvian authorities found that more than 90% of the wood aboard was the ship named Yaku-Calpa, which mostly contained wood from La Arosa en route to Global Plywood, had been harvested illegally in Peru. In November, U.S. Customs and Border Protection blocked its importation into the United States. That move, along with additional seizures of timber by officials in Peru, set off street protests by supporters of the lumber industry in logging towns. Demonstrators carried coffins symbolically emblazoned with the names of forestry inspectors. The shipment containing some 3.8 million pounds of wood is languishing in the port of Houston, according to a Homeland Security spokesperson in Texas. And now we turn to biological diversity news. The feds refuse to protect the habitat of northern long-eared bats. Although northern long-eared bat populations have declined by a shocking 90% in their core range, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said it won't protect any of the bats' key habitat. Northern long-eared bats were protected under the Endangered Species Act in 2015 in response to a 2010 Center for Biological Diversity petition. The Center Service initially proposed to protect the bats as endangered, but following intense pressure from industry, backpedaled and listed them as threatened, with a special rule allowing ongoing habitat destruction. These forest-dependent bats have been decimated by the invasive and deadly disease known as white nose syndrome, and they're still threatened with habitat loss from logging, mining, oil and gas development, and other activities. If you don't protect places endangered species live, it becomes that much harder to save them, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Tanya Sanarib. This is yet another instance where the Fish and Wildlife Service has gone out of its way to appease special interests rather than protect our most vulnerable animals. And the reward for a red wolf killer comes too late. The feds had offered a $2,500 reward for information aiding in the arrest of someone involved in the killing of an endangered red wolf. But the reward does the opposite of showing dedication to red wolf protection because it's too late to matter. The wolf killer now being hunted actually shot the animal 6 months ago, and at least seven other red wolves were killed in 2015. Yet this is the first time the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has offered a reward in the past year and a half since it began dismantling red wolf recovery, including law enforcement efforts to guard the species. Red wolves are among the world's most endangered carnivores, with only 45 wild animals remaining. Earlier this month, the center sued to force the service to release information on its decision to abandon their recovery. By waiting until the trail has gone cold to take action, the service is pandering to special interests opposed to wolves instead of doing its job to protect them, said the center's Brett Harty. And from the wild and weird, will the real funky chicken please stand up? Springtime in the sagebrush country of the western United States is a beautiful thing. Wildflowers pop their waxy blossoms, wet meadows bristle with flitting birds, the bizarre bosom displays of the amorous male greater sage grouse burble across the steppe. With the air-filled yellow chest sacks throbbing and thrusting for the attention of females, the courtship dance of this dandy grouse is part obnoxious and part exquisite. Add to the display a starburst of tail feathers and these guys start to look like avant-garde turkeys, performing what we might call nature's version of a dance known as the funky chicken. Unfortunately, greater sage grouse are in trouble. Habitat loss and fragmentation due to cattle grazing and oil and gas development continue to threaten their survival and recovery. Go to the website biologicaldiversity.org to watch a video of the male greater sage grouse as they dance like nobody's watching. And the killing has been halted. California County has suspended Wildlife Services contract. A settlement agreement stemming from a lawsuit by the Center for Biological Diversity and their allies means that California's Mendocino County will suspend its contract with the Federal Wildlife Killing Agency while a full environmental review is conducted. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services kills hundreds of coyotes, mountain lions, bears, bobcats, and other wildlife in Mendocino County every year. The center and its allies twice sued the county for failing to comply with the California Environmental Quality Act in approving its contract with the program. Under the terms of the settlement, Mendocino County must evaluate the merits of a non-lethal predator control program and prepare an environmental impact report if it decides to enter into a contract with Wildlife Services in the future. This may finally begin to curb widespread killing by this rogue program, which wiped out more than 47,000 animals in California in the year 2014 alone. And Yellowstone's grizzlies need your help. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has announced plans to remove federal protection from Yellowstone's grizzly bears, a population that has increased since listing in 1975 thanks to the safeguards of the Endangered Species Act and the park, but which is also in decline and severely isolated. Yellowstone area grizzlies are finding their food sources in collapse and their mortality rates reached an all-time high last year. Removing federal protections from this iconic grizzly population would be a terrible setback for the species' recovery. Surrounding states are already lining up proposals to start trophy hunts. Let's get these animals back on the road to recovery. Tell the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that removing federal protections for Yellowstone grizzly bears is dangerously premature. These bears must be allowed to roam without being hunted or shot. And will herpes save Australia via Carpageddon? In the 1960s, a fish farm strain of carp imported from Europe was introduced into Australia's Murray-Darling River Basin. Adopted for prolific breeding, this carp would soon displace native fish. It now makes up more than 80% of the fish biomass in many rivers in Australia. Carp damage riverbeds, cause erosion, and reduce water quality. The Australian government plans to resolve the problem by releasing an imported strain of herpes virus on the fish in a program it calls Carpageddon. The strain Cyprinid herpes virus 3 first appeared in Israel, Germany, and the United States in the late 1990s and spread rapidly to countries around the world where it has decimated both farm-raised and native carp populations. Australian scientists have concluded the first ever use of herpes as a biocontrol agent is unlikely to harm humans or other native fish, but in the past, studies have been unable to rule out unforeseen problems that can arise when new exotic organisms are dumped into an ecosystem. In fact, in many cases, introduced biocontrol agents have become harmful invasives themselves. And the Environmental Protection Agency says atrazine is likely harming most animals and plants in the United States. Here's an ugly revelation. The amount of herbicide atrazine that's released into the environment in the United States is likely harming most species of plants and animals, including mammals, birds, amphibians, and reptiles. That's according to a preliminary risk assessment by the Environmental Protection Agency that was posted briefly on its website and then removed. Atrazine is a well-known hormone disruptor that's been linked to birth defects and cancer in humans and contamination of ground surface and drinking water supplies. It's rightly been banned in Europe, where more than 70 million pounds are dumped onto U.S. lands and rivers each year. Among the new findings, the amount of atrazine already in our streams and rivers is enough to kill frogs and other imperiled wildlife. How many animals have to die before we do what Europe did 12 years ago and ban atrazine, asked the center's Nathan Donnelly. and a wildlife win, ORVs won't run roughshod over Santa Fe National Forest. In the victory for wildlife and native places, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals has dismissed a challenge by an off-road vehicle interest against a federal plan to limit cross-country driving on the Santa Fe National Forest. The Center for Biological Diversity and their allies had intervened in the case, defending a U.S. Forest Service plan that will help protect wildlife and precious places in the forest. The decision protects habitat for the threatened Jemez Mountain salamanders, Mexican spotted owls, goshawks, Rio Grande cutthroat trout, southwestern willow flycatchers, and New Mexico meadow jumping mice in the forest that stretches over 1.6 million acres in northern New Mexico. We're happy to see the court acknowledge that general complaints by some motorized recreationists shouldn't stop common sense plans to protect threatened species, said the center's Katie Davis. Safeguarding our wildlife, rivers, and natural areas benefits everyone. And Mexican wolves will receive a recovery plan. Mexican gray wolves will at last have a roadmap towards recovery thanks to a settlement won by the center and their allies, requiring the Fish and Wildlife Service to finalize a recovery plan by November 2017. The settlement, opposed by the livestock industry and not binding until the court approves it, comes 40 years after Mexican wolves first received Endangered Species Act protection. In 1982, one of the last five wild wolves had been captured for breeding. The service produced a two-year interim recovery plan, insufficient because it lacked criteria for wolf delisting. The service later drafted three more plans, but finalized none. Since Mexican wolf reintroduction began in 1998, the service has shot and trapped dozens of wolves in response to politics, seldom releasing any from captivity. Right now, only 97 wolves live in the United States Southwest and fewer than 25 in Mexico. Said the center's Michael Robinson, this recovery plan should trigger new releases of captive-bred wolves and establish new populations in the Grand Canyon and Southern Rockies ecosystems. A lawsuit will protect rare cats in Arizona and Texas from government killers. The Center for Biological Diversity and the Animal Welfare Institute have filed notice of intent to sue the U.S. Department of Agriculture to ensure that endangered ocelots aren't inadvertently killed as part of its long-running program to kill coyotes, bears, bobcats, and other wildlife in Texas and Arizona. The United States Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services program kills thousands of animals yearly in the two states using traps, snares, and poisons. Under the Endangered Species Act, the program needs to consult with the Fish and Wildlife Service to identify ways to reduce the risk to ocelots from its predator-killing activities. New analysis is required because in recent years, ocelots have been spotted in several additional locations in Arizona, including the Huachuca and Santa Rita Mountains. Fewer than 100 of these unique spotted cats likely exist in the United States. Ocelots were dragged to the brink of extinction decades ago, partly because of the government's persecution of predators, said the center's Colette Adkins. Now the few that remained face the same fate. The war on predators has to stop before we lose these beautiful cats forever. And four turtle species have won international trade protection. New safeguards for over-harvested turtles. The Fish and Wildlife Service announced it will regulate and monitor international trade of common snapping turtles and three kinds of softshell turtles, all of which are U.S. freshwater natives. The decision responds in part to a 2011 request from the Center for Biological Diversity documenting the harms of the turtle trade. The rule adds the turtles to Appendix 3 of the International Wildlife Treaty known as CITES. It's aimed at curbing the devastating over-exploitation of these animals. About 2 million live turtles are caught in the American wild each year and shipped to Asia to be turned into food or used in folk medicine. Trade in Appendix 3 species requires an export permit and documentation that the animal was acquired legally. Animals must also be shipped using methods designed to prevent cruel treatment. And a suit has been launched to stop highways threatening rare Texas critters. The Center for Biological Diversity and their allies have filed notice of intent to sue Texas for approving a major highway expansion project in Austin without properly assessing its effects on three federally protected species, the Barton Springs salamander, the Austin blind salamander, and the golden-cheeked warbler. The construction of the MOPAC Intersections Project, slated for the environmentally sensitive Edwards Aquifer region in central Texas, is likely to harm the two salamanders, each of which live only in the immediate area, as well as the tiny, strikingly colored golden-cheeked warbler, which nests only in the area's juniper oak woodlands. Yet the Texas Department of Transportation did only a cursory environmental review of the project and flouted legal requirements to discuss it with federal biologists. Unchecked sprawl and transportation projects have already helped push these unique endangered species toward extinction, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Jenny Loda. This project is only going to accelerate their demise. And protection is sought for an ancient nautilus threatened by the shell trade. The chambered nautilus, a relative of squids and octopi, is a beautiful ocean mollusk with a spiral shell and about 90 tentacles it uses to catch prey. It is often called a living fossil because of its striking resemblance to ancestors that swam shallow seas 500 million years ago. But these mollusks are now threatened with extinction due to overharvest for the international shell trade. The Center for Biological Diversity has petitioned to protect them under the Endangered Species Act, seeking to curtail imports of chambered nautilus shells and prevent extinction of the species in the Indo-Pacific. Over the past 16 years, nearly 1.7 million nautilus shell products have been imported into the United States. The chambered nautilus is being collected and sold into extinction for jewelry and other trinkets, said Dr. Abel Valdiva, a marine scientist with the Center for Biological Diversity. Endangered Species Act protections can play a life-saving role for these incredible animals, but we need to act fast. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and online streaming live at www.freakradio.org. We also have a rebroadcast of the Earth First Update at 3 o'clock on Fridays. In Idaho, you can listen to Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, KRFP 90.3 FM at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays. And in Boston, Massachusetts, WZBC Truth and Justice Radio at 90.3 FM broadcast the Earth First Update between 6 and 10 a.m. on Sundays. An online internet radio station, the Grateful Dread Public Radio, broadcasts the Earth First Update Sunday at 2 a.m. Tune them in at gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org. And you can also find them on TuneIn and Spotify. And you can always go to radio4all.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net. Or you can listen online to this Earth First Update or previous editions, and please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update each week. It's free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio. It's produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in next week to another edition of the Earth First Update.